Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is actually more troubling than cool. It's that gluten reduces blood flow to the brain, and it interferes with thyroid hormones that you need to make ATP, to maintain insulin on your nerves called myelin, and just have mitochondria that work really well. And did I mention mitochondria? That's the subject of Headstrong, my new book. If you head to orderheadstrong.com, you can pick up your pre-order copy of it. And Headstrong teaches you about how to make your mitochondria sing and actually just have more energy, because when you have more energy, everything you do is easier. So gluten is not going to help your mitochondria. And before we get into the show, there are a few new Bulletproof products you might want to hear about. There's Bulletproof Key Nutrient Collection number 1. We've got a bunch of new supplements out there for you, things to support healthy thyroid with iodine, your metabolism, your immune and nervous systems. There's a 5-pack of supplements with methylfolate, methyl B12, iodine, an amino acid called L-tyrosine, and calcium D-glucarate, which helps your body with detox. So these are things that I take every day, things on the top 10 Bulletproof list. I've been wanting to bring these together for you for a long time. So we went out and we found really, really clean sources and actually did the manufacturing from scratch instead of putting a sticker on a bottle of something that was already out there, which is very common in this industry. So I hope you'll have a chance to give those a try. Most bioavailability and just a great stack of things. You've been asking what I do every day for a long time. Well, now you know some of this. You'll find the power pack there at bulletproof.com. All right. Today's guest is returning to Bulletproof Radio and knows a thing or two about gluten. He's here to tell us why gluten should be in all of your smoothies. No, it's actually the opposite of that. This is none other than Dr. William Davis, who's a very well-known cardiologist, author, health crusader, and he's written extensively about gluten, but his new book, which is what he's on the show to talk about, is called Undoctored: Why the Healthcare System Has Failed You and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. So welcome back, Bill. It's a pleasure to have you on Bulletproof Radio again.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Glad to be back.
What made you write a book instead of about the evils of grain to switch gears and talk about actually health care? Like this is a tough thing to write about because it's kind of boring. So what... What made you do this?
Well, you know, what I saw unfold with the Wheat Belly message over these past almost 6 years since the first Wheat Belly book came out was I started this conversation about wheat and the gliadin protein, all the other indigestible proteins of wheat and related grains. I expanded that conversation into all grains because it became clear that all seeds of grasses share characteristics, and you get even further benefit by going completely grain-free. But then I took it even further. You probably already know that grain consumption causes, ironically, Dave, causes numerous nutrient deficiencies for a variety of reasons, but among the reasons are the phytates of grains. The phytates block absorption of minerals. And so most people start out with pretty profound magnesium deficiency, for instance, many with iron deficiency and zinc deficiency. And there are other common deficiencies that we can't blame on grains, like iodine, as you know. And so I started correcting those deficiencies also. You know, I saw, Dave, and I'm sure it's similar to your experience, I started seeing extraordinary transformations in health. It started with this notion of wheat and grain elimination. That alone is very powerful.
Yeah.
You fold in some of these other strategies like vitamin D, magnesium restoration, and most recently cultivation of bowel flora.
Yeah.
And I started seeing hundreds of thousands of people who'd come back to me and say, you know what, I don't have diabetes anymore. I don't have rheumatoid arthritis. All that pain, joint pain is gone. The swelling is gone. My acid reflux, my irritable bowel syndrome is completely gone. My ulcerative colitis is gone. And my doctor told me it was stupid. In other words, people were getting better across hundreds, literally hundreds of health conditions in spite of their doctors, Dave. And I'm sure you've heard this from other people. Okay. What we're seeing is an extraordinary shift in the way people are managing their health. Dave, they're doing it themselves. So you and your audience, you're not a bunch of scientists and doctors talking about, you know, procedures and drugs. You're talking about things that are intrinsic, natural to the human experience, and we're seeing disease reverse. So that's why I came to put this whole thing together, and I called it Undoctored. It's health in spite of your doctor. It's health because the healthcare system has nothing to do with health. I say the enemy of the healthcare system is healthy people.
Well, there's probably 10 to 20%, we'll call them medical professionals, not all doctors, who listen to Bulletproof Radio. It's way higher than I ever would have imagined, but because we cross the line between epigenetics and changing the environment and getting highly compliant, interested patients, and just like people who are motivated, because the doctors who I know, like at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, I gave a keynote there this year. And these are people who are only motivated by helping. And of course, most of them have got their patients off of whole grains and non-whole grains as well, in alignment with what you'd recommend and what I'd recommend. But they genuinely want to do this. And then I've heard many stories from them where they say, well, people come in, they're so hostile to me because I'm a doctor. And they think that I'm going to be the same as the 3 minutes, you know, and here's some drugs kind of a model. Are you looking to drive like a shift towards that? Or are you worried about people being even more hostile towards their doctors?
Well, you know, I feel bad for the early adopters among my colleagues, the ones who truly do understand that healthcare is a corrupt system, that these exceptions that you know are the ones who truly dedicate to health. They're out there. And I agree, there's probably, I'm not sure what percentage, no one's ever made that assessment, but it's probably 5%, maybe 10%. I'd be skeptical more than that.
But
they're
wow.
out there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be surprised actually if it's more than 5%. So if you just go out to any hospital where the conventional practitioners hang out, not going to a conference where all the forward thinkers are congregating.
Okay, my sample size is biased. I'll give you that.
Yeah. So or even worse, Dave, if you go to a hospital staff meeting or behind closed doors meeting with management and the administration, you'll get a real taste of what's going on in healthcare. And you'll see that mainstream, not the exceptions, not the early adopters among my colleagues, but the mainstream, the guys who work in hospitals, the guys who are employees of hospital systems, the guys who place money ahead of patient welfare, or at least your health. This is exceptionally common. I can't tell you whether it's 80, 90, or 95% of my colleagues, but it is the vast majority. And it's those people who are driving revenues, healthcare costs, ordering MRI scans, telling a nice guy like you that you need an implantable defibrillator for $90,000. Those are the people I'm aiming my criticism towards.
That's it? I'll take two.
A quarter of which, by the way, Dave, it's quite clear, a quarter, and it's not my data, these are published data, a quarter of an implantable defibrillators are nasty, nasty things.
Yeah.
They're huge. They stick out. 25%, almost a quarter of them are implanted without cause. Because it pays so well. If it paid poorly, there'd be almost no unnecessary procedures. But it pays so well that a quarter of the implantable defibrillators are unnecessary. So we have a healthcare system who puts profit. When I say healthcare system, by the way, Dave, I don't mean just the doctors. Obviously, there's a lot more than doctors. And I'm not really talking about the technicians and the orderlies. I'm talking about hospital administrators and big pharma, the medical device industry, and multinational corporations. So people, the real power holders in the healthcare system, they don't put health first. They put health care first, that is generating revenues to profit the insiders.
It is definitely happening, and you see it in insurance. I remember years ago when I decided that I was going to just take charge of what was going on, I went to the doctor and I'm like, man, I feel like I can barely work. I'm tired all the time. I've gained 30 pounds. I weighed 300 pounds. I'd come down to somewhere around 240, 250. And then I just ballooned up again over the course of a couple of months. And I felt like something was poisoning me. So I go to the doctor. He goes, maybe you should lose some weight. I'm like, I've been fat for a long time. You think I don't know that? And it kind of made me mad. I'm like, so maybe you could tell me how. And he goes, you should just eat healthy and eat less. I'm like, and what does eating healthy mean? He goes, low fat, or, you know, kind of mumbled. And so he said, maybe you have high blood sugar. So I bought a blood glucose meter back then, and I stuck my finger a dozen times a day. And I said, you know, it's not, my blood sugar isn't that high. It was pre-diabetic, but it wasn't like end of the world high. And he said, well, basically, I don't know. And I said, well, let me tell you, vitamin C seems to make me feel better. And he goes, how much do you take? And I go, I take 3 grams a day. And he goes, stop, it could kill you. And I looked at him and I said, what about Linus Pauling? And Linus Pauling is the founder of orthomolecular medicine, which was the grandfather of functional medicine as we know it today. And I'm saying that for our listeners, obviously you know this. And so Linus Pauling took 90 grams of vitamin C a day and was famous for this stuff, 2 Nobel Prize kind of guy. And I realized my doctor didn't know who it was. So I looked at the guy and I said, you're fired. And I walked out of his office. I never paid him. They sent it to collections. I said, no service was delivered. And okay, I was an angry, toxic guy living. It turns out I was living in a house with toxic mold in the walls, which is why I gained the weight and why I was having all these symptoms of being poisoned, because I was being poisoned. But the experience left me so angry and just upset. I didn't see a doctor for 4 years. And when I came back, Bill, I had a list of 7 possible diagnoses, all from Dr. Google and things like that. I'd read textbooks about each one. And I said, I want this test from this lab and this treatment plan or this test. And the poor doctor, fortunately, who was a functional medicine doctor, was like, who the hell are you? And okay, we'll test you for all these, but do you mind if I pick the order? Because I could probably tell you. And for me, that was a wake-up moment. And this is why I think your book is cool. It is a wake-up moment that there are people out there who will work with you and will listen to that stuff, but they're not the people that you're writing about, right?
No, absolutely not. But you, Dave Asprey, are a perfect example of what's happening. Now, you're an early adopter. You're at the front of the line, but there's more and more people who are following your lead. And that is, if I had Dave Asprey, a conventional primary care doctor in the same room, who knows more about health, about nutrients, nutritional supplements, healthy eating, exercise, etc. Who knows more? You, the doctor. Dave Asprey knows a ton more.
I should be cooking, and if my arm is broken, he should be setting it. Like we have our specialties, right?
But the thing I want to expose is that healthcare puts on this charade that they know everything there is to know about health, and you don't know anything. You're this helpless, ignorant consumer of healthcare, and they know everything. They hold the purse strings, they have all the knowledge, and you and I know that is complete nonsense. The doctors know almost nothing. When you ask those doctors about nutrition, you found how thin their knowledge was. It's almost non-existent. If you were to talk to a doctor, even about something as pedestrian and common now as vitamin D, you're going to find a very, very superficial understanding 99% of the time. Yet these are crucial issues for health. And so what I see happening is Dave Asprey and all the people around us are saying, healthcare seems to be the system that just wants to squeeze me for money. And I can use them when I have a car accident or I bust my femur or I have an infection when I come back from Costa Rica. But just for health, for weight, nutrition, restoration of nutritional deficiencies, And the diseases of lifestyle, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, acid reflux, even autoimmune disease, the hundreds of diseases that are common around us, the non-catastrophic, non-injurious, non-infectious, common diseases around us can be managed by people themselves. And you know what, Dave, just as you are a living example, the results you obtain are superior to what the healthcare system and the doctors could attain. So what I'm seeing is we have the means, if we give people just benign guidance, we have the means to take health out of the hands of healthcare and put it in the hands of people. And that's why I call it the undoctored book.
It's a great title, and it's happening in part because of the internet and because of social media. When you look at what happens, you get a guy like me who loses 100 pounds and starts to look younger and all that, and I'm willing to talk about it and willing to tell people, oh, this thing like ketosis really matters when you go into fat burning mode. Pre-internet, if I would have said 4 years ago, hey, you should try putting butter in this brain octane oil in your special mold-free coffee, it wouldn't have gone anywhere without a national Wall Street Journal ad campaign or something for tens of millions of dollars, and no doctor would have talked about it. But last year, there were 48 million cups of Bulletproof coffee served.
That's great.
And that's social media, and each of those boosted people's ketones, which had an effect on their mitochondria. And there was a shortage of grass-fed butter, and a lot of people saying no to grains because of your work, and because the speed of this change is there, and people can see the results on a day-to-day Instagram account, and you just couldn't do that even 10 years ago. So I think you must be feeling kind of vindicated because you came out with Wheat Belly at kind of just the right time to really take advantage of people sharing what works.
Well, just as you have, I think we're all participating in this large worldwide conversation. Because, you know, healthcare has not done its job. I call, it's really a charade. Imagine the prison system. Imagine the U.S. prison system called itself the good behavior system, purporting that if somebody goes through 10 years incarceration, they're going to come out a good citizen. That, of course, is absolute nonsense, right? Yeah. Prison is, for the most part, a place to learn how to be a better criminal.
Yep.
So healthcare puts on this charade of providing health. It does not provide health. If healthcare provided health, those doctors who gave you terrible information would have given you real, they should have said, Dave, let's talk about your home, what it looks like. What's your nutrition look like? How do you sleep? Let's check some basic labs, look at your thyroid status and your hormonal status and potential for nutrient deficiency. That was what the conversation should have been. Instead, it's this brief, superficial search for what drugs do you need, what procedures do you need, because that's the stuff that drives revenues and also covers their ass, right? Because it identifies the catastrophic stuff that can be held liable for. But the healthcare system forgot to give you health. And so, you know, I lost faith, Dave, that health will come from the healthcare system. I'm grateful there are early adopters among my colleagues, the ones that you know and have talked to. But when we talk about mainstream healthcare, the administrators, mm-hmm. the doctors, the drug industry, the medical device industry, those people don't give a damn about health. They give a damn about their bottom line. You know, in the U.S., healthcare consumes 17.5% of GDP. What they don't tell you, what healthcare insiders don't tell you, is they want it to be 19%, 20%, 21%, because that money is your money going into their pocket. It's a huge wealth transfer. How else can you justify one drug, like for hepatitis C, for $94,000? 120 tablets in one vial. It means you go to the pharmacy, you fill your prescription, you get one bottle with 120 tablets, for $94,000. That's what we're up against. It didn't cost $94,000. You know how much it cost to manufacture those tablets? $37. So that's right, a few dollars. That is the markup. Now they have to recover R&D, but the money they recover charging $84,000 to $94,000 per person is far beyond what they deserve to recover in R&D. But that's an example of the kind of mentality, the mindset that goes on in healthcare. It is raw profiteering. And that's okay. You know, it's a business. They are entitled to run a business and make a profit. But what gets my goat is that they pretend to say that they're on your side. They're your friends. We're here to help you. No, they're not. They're no more on your side than going to, you know, the grocery, going to the department store. It's not a charity. It's a business. They're in business. So they should stop acting like they're a charity or they're doing benevolent work. They're not.
I learned a long time ago that anytime anyone tells you that they're doing something for your own protection or your own good, they're pretty much trying to take money from you. Every single time. And now I got to ask you this question. I find it morally repugnant that I need a permission slip to get chemicals to control my own biology. It's my body and I'll do what I want with it. Now, my wife is a physician who ran she's Karolinska trained. She ran drug and alcohol emergency centers in Stockholm. So she's dealt with like hardcore people dying of heroin overdoses and all that. Now she does fertility consulting. We wrote a book together on epigenetics, our first book. And she's not in that field anymore. But every time I tell her, like, prescriptions are repugnant to freedom and it's not okay, she gets mad at me and then makes me cook dinner again. But what do you think on this front? I mean, on its face, I got to go in and spend a couple $100 to see a doctor to get a permission slip to get the thyroid hormone I've been on for 20 years since I got Hashimoto's. By the way, I'm down 75% from my previous dose as my system gets stronger. But I still have to wait in line, give money to some guy in a lab coat, who's actually a friend of mine now, and then go to another lady and give her my permission slip and then give her some more money for something I should be able to order on Amazon. Like, do you find that system broken, or is that still for my best interest?
I think it comes from the paternalistic attitude that the doctor knows best and you don't know anything. But as you see, that's completely falling apart. And as you have learned, a guy like Dave Asprey knows a lot more than the doctor when it comes to health. So we're entering an age where you can actually get a lot of your own blood tests drawn on your own. Yeah, so you know now there are states where that prevent you from doing that. That by the way, is because the hospital lobby wants to protect its business.
New York, we're looking at you right now. New York has the worst lab testing laws of any state in the country.
That's right.
It's a little known fact, but my wife and I started one of the first medical lab testing companies that allowed you to order a test at home without a doctor. It was a special test called the MELISA test for mercury and lime and mold and things like that back in the mid-2000s. But yeah, the regulatory stuff is insane on that front.
So you're part of the movement to reject that notion that people need to have the permission of their doctors to get blood work.
Well, it's my data.
It's crumbling.
Like, who owns my data? It's not you. It's me. Or Facebook. I guess they own everything, right?
Yeah, right. It is crumbling. You know, it's going to take another several decades before you can just walk into a lab willy-nilly. Now, maybe you have to pay for it yourself. Maybe the doctor is right in saying, to some degree, I need to determine what's truly necessary for health care. Mm-hmm. Rather than letting everybody just order any test they want and have it the cost be borne by healthcare insurance. But I think if you just wanted off the books, off the healthcare insurance, you should be able to get anything you want. I agree with that. And that is happening, though it's spotty still. Yeah, like New York, New Jersey, California still block it. But it is happening. And by the way, you can still get around that. So I've had people do such things as this. They order a ZRT test kit, for instance, which is, of course, a finger stick test kit. They're really cool little test kits. You can test a whole bunch of stuff. But you're in, say, New York, and you can't have it shipped to your cousin in Indiana and then have your cousin ship it to you in New York, you know? So it's an extra hassle and some postage, but you can get it done. And because you and your listeners know a ton about health. And if you just want to know what your free T3 is, your thyroid hormone, and your doctor says, that's stupid, you don't need to know that. And you say, no, I don't agree. All the reading I've done suggests it's actually a critical marker. And the doctor says, I'm the doctor, you're the patient, who went to medical school here? You say, you're fired, and you're going to go get done yourself. We're entering that age where that's going to happen. And people are more and more, I mean, compare with how this all happened just 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Where a nice guy like Dave Asprey would walk into the medical library, because there was no internet, of course, walk into the medical library, and the medical librarian would look you up and down. and wonder if you're a pervert because you want to look at the naked pictures of people in medical books. That was what passed off as getting medical information back then by a consumer. Now, you, me, your readers have access to an extraordinary library of information, worldwide access to information, experts, studies, data. And this idea that only doctors are able to understand and access necessary information is complete malarkey now. So we all have this level playing field of information. And it's still early, but over the next few years and decades, we're going to see armies of people armed with their apps, their health apps, their health measuring devices, these sorts of websites that empower you, like patientslikeme.com, and I hope the Undoctored website proves to be that kind of a tool also. Your websites, your online presence are empowering people to say, you know what, I don't think I need the doctor to help me with my blood sugar, weight loss, or my acid reflux symptoms. I think I can do this on my own. And I can tell you, having witnessed this many, many times, people do a better job of it than their doctors and get better results.
So what kind of conditions? So in your book, Undoctored, you have basically an approach for how to take control and how to DIY, you know, the Home Depot of taking care of yourself, so to speak. and I fully support that. Right? Like, but there are times when you want to go to an expert. I can tell you that if my natural gas is leaking, I'm probably not going to wrap some duct tape around it because it might just end poorly for me there, right? Yeah. Like I know my limits for home repair. In fact, they're quite low. That's not where my strength is. And I also maybe don't know my limits for controlling my own biology. So what are the conditions that work best for people to do your undoctored approach on?
Well, let me flip that around for a bit. Okay. So when I first started contemplating how to present this information to everyone, it seemed impossible, right, Dave? Because we're talking about, do we say, okay, if you have type 2 diabetes, read this or go here. If you need to lose 100 pounds, you go over there. If you have polymyalgia rheumatica, you read that chapter. If you have acid reflux or ulcerative colitis, go over here. In other words, it would become completely unmanageable, the information required. So I did this instead. I borrowed from what I saw in the evolving wheat belly experience. I said, you know what? When we put all these pieces together that evolved over time, that is elimination of wheat and grains, restoration of vitamin D, correction of iodine deficiency, and correction of the most common endocrine disruption of all, hypothyroidism, magnesium restoration, cultivation of bowel flora. Those are kind of the core strategies, what I call the wild, naked, and unwashed program in the undoctored program. Do this. I don't care if they label you with rheumatoid arthritis or if they labeled you with obesity or labeled you with type 2 diabetes. I don't care. Everyone starts with the same basic program. And more often than not, you won't have those conditions anymore. Sometimes it takes more than a few days or a few weeks. As you know, autoimmune conditions can take weeks to months to reverse. But everyone does the same basic program. Then see what you have left. More often than not, you've got nothing left. You're off your 10 medications. You've lost 57 pounds. Your hemoglobin A1C and blood sugar are now down to normal or ideal. Your rheumatoid arthritis is receding or is gone. The joint pain is gone. So we don't have to worry about giving a program that's unique to every specific disorder. Start with the same program and then deal with anything that is residual. And more often than not, you won't have anything left.
But what's happening is that we've been taught, because of the reductionist perspective, where I'm a kidney doctor, right? But maybe that had a lot to do with your skin, just saying, but you're not a dermatologist, but those skin tags tell you what's going on in your kidneys, like the whole system of what's going on in the body matters. And what you're doing is you're going at it from a systems perspective and saying, when you do this, it doesn't really matter if you've got migraines or if you've got autoimmunity, the triggers are probably similar. And so let's just kind of pull those out.
Absolutely. There's also a very peculiar synergy that I don't fully understand among all the basic strategies. That is like vitamin D and grain elimination. You leave one component out and the whole suffers. Just what I learned early on in the wheat belly experience. If all you did was eliminate wheat, you get a ton of health benefits.
Yeah.
If you go grain-free, you get even more benefits. If you fold...
Amen. Say that again. Everyone listening, this is why the Bulletproof Diet says don't eat any grains, same as your book. Because grains, it's not about gluten-free. Like garbanzo amaranth toast is still not a good choice. Like, anyway, you can say that until the end of time and people should hear it more.
So what we're talking about is the seeds of grass. That's what grains are. People don't think of them that way. And I tell people, you know, if you try to go out and eat your grass, your lawn, you're going to get very sick. You can't eat the blades, you can't eat the roots, you can't eat the seeds, because humans don't have the digestive apparatus to consume the components of grasses. Even the seeds, you can make them edible, but you can never make them fully digestible. And that's a big part of the reason why the proteins, specifically the proteins of the seeds of grasses, whether we call it wheat or rye or barley or millet or sorghum or rice or corn, the proteins are either indigestible or only partially digestible. That's why they have very peculiar effects, like opioid effects, inflammatory effects, mind effects, emotional effects, all kinds of effects. And ironically, there is one very digestible component in grains. That's the amylopectin carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And that's the component that is responsible for sky-high blood sugars. And that's why grains make you fat. And make you fat and diabetic. And so it is extraordinary, Dave, isn't it, that national guidelines from our own U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans, tells us that our diet should be centered based on grains, preferably whole. They have given us a diet that guarantees obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other health conditions. It's no surprise. I know it's not to you and your listeners. It's no surprise that the U.S. is among the fattest nations on earth with an incredible amount of type 2 diabetes. This was man-made, much of it created by national guidelines. It is an unforgivable, horrible mess. And it takes you and me, because the doctors aren't rejecting it. If you went to John Q. Primary Care, he won't say, Dave, you know, I rejected the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans years ago. Let me tell you what I think you really should do. I doubt you ever hear that from a conventional thinking doctor. You'll get the usual crap, right? Cut your fat, cut your calories, less in, move more, all that nonsense that is quite clear does not work. The
stuff that made me fat and made me feel like a failure for not trying hard enough when I weighed 300 pounds.
Me too. Me too.
I remember that. I think a lot of us do who are free from that. But something happened when you started talking about don't eat grain. When I started campaigning really hard for grass-fed dairy, there was a national shortage of grass-fed dairy that resulted in more grassland being put into production and less corn land and wheat land being taken out of the environment and put into industrial production for agriculture. So it actually created a shift in the supply. When people read Undoctored and they go into their primary care physician and they have one of the, I'll call one of the bad ones, who's unwilling to engage in a discussion or unwilling to take the steps to continuously educate themselves on what we've discovered in the last few years versus 20 years ago, they're just going to stop seeing their doctors the way I did. And they're going to find I see an increasing number of doctors, even you probably have them too, guys who are cardiologists who hand out your book or hand out the Bulletproof Diet to their patients. They try this instead of statins. Like, I get emails from those doctors. And these are doctors working in hospitals, but they're like, they want to create change. They're terrified they'll violate the standard of care and they'll lose their livelihood from like the medical mafia. But when no more customers are coming to them because they are following the standard of care that is wrong and no one wants, are we going to see like a wholesale shift of doctors opening up to your ideas and just to the functional medicine world? Or are you less hopeful than that?
I think there's going to be a percentage who do that, who embrace your message, my message, the messages of others. But I think it's going to still, the majority still will not, because money is involved, Dave. And in other words, I see many of the colleagues around me, like the same as they come to you, they go into a functional medicine mode. What they find is they don't make much money at it. And so it's very tough to convince the $1.4 million a year dermatologist or the $2 million a year ophthalmologist or the well-paid orthopedic surgeon, or et cetera. It's very tough to persuade them that you should really just sit down with your patients and talk about nutrition, diet, nutrition, you know, and nutrients, because they're going to find that their income is slashed by 90%. And so the healthcare system is simply not equipped. And my colleagues, for the most part, are not prepared to suffer that kind of financial hurt. So I'm skeptical that the guy who's got that fancy 550 Mercedes is going to do this. So that's why I say it's, you know, the irony, Dave, is the what you can achieve, because you're an example of it. Your listeners are examples of it. What you can achieve on your own without the doctor, is that a little bit? You can achieve extraordinary things, because I see this play out every single day. I got slender, healthy, and got rid of 14 medications in spite of my doctor. And when I went back to the doctor said, well, I don't understand it, but just do what you're doing. Rarely, it does happen once in a while, but rarely do they say, what did you do? Tell me more. I need to understand what it is you did so I can, maybe I'm overlooking something. I hope there are ones saying that, but as you know, that's the exception rather than the rule.
I put my dad went in for surgery a few years ago, and I put him on the right vitamins and said, you know, you're old enough, Dad, maybe you should just be on a little testosterone and growth hormone for your recovery period, because you're deficient in both of them anyway. So he got the appropriate ability to do that. So he goes in post-surgery, has profound healing, twice as fast as they've ever seen before. And he asked the surgeon, so do you want to know why this is happening? And he says, no.
Complete disinterest.
It's like the clinical observation is where innovation happens in medicine. And I was maybe less experienced than I am now, because this was 10 years ago when I think about it. And I was just blown away. Like, how could he not want to know? Like, wouldn't you want that for every patient? But there was no curiosity there, which really surprised me.
Because no money changed hands.
Yeah.
So my son did the same thing. He shattered his wrist in playing hockey, and he had to have reconstructive surgery, several pins, etc. Well, I told him, boost your D way up. Yeah. Get on a high dose of D in preparation for surgery and then through surgery. He went in follow-up after his surgery, the orthopedist said, I have never seen anybody who healed as fast as you. And Bill said the same thing, my son. He said, you want to know what I did? He says, no. So, but it was one of many tens of thousands of examples, Dave, that I just saw, and my behind the closed doors experiences in hospitals and hospital meetings over many years, I realized that the solutions are unlikely to come from within healthcare. You know, just like Kodak, you know, Kodak had a $40 billion a year business. They were on the New York Stock Exchange for 70 years, 140,000 employees, very smug. And when someone invented digital photography from within, they scrapped it and hid it because they thought it would cannibalize their conventional business. We know what happened after the digitization occurred outside of Kodak, and it's almost closed them down completely. Now they're almost forgotten. I want to see something like that happen to much of healthcare. I want the curtain pulled back, that the system that operates for profit, not for health, for profit, is largely unnecessary. We do need hospitals for busted legs and car accidents. And in fact, we do need the healthcare system, but we don't need this bloated profit-making system that we have. The system could be shrunk down to a fraction of its size. Your healthcare insurance should be a fraction of what it is, and people should be healthier. But that message would never come from the healthcare system, from the hospitals, from the drug industry. It's got to come from you and me and our online conversations and social media and books and websites and podcasts. That's why I celebrate these kinds of things, Dave, because what you're doing is you're saying, you know what? I have a lot of information here that is superior to what your doctor will give you, superior to what you're going to get from a hospital. And it is, because people follow your program, listen to you, and they get healthy and they get informed about how to stay healthy. So that's what excites me. We're part of this massive movement of knowledge, information, all while the healthcare system thinks it's silly.
You're definitely onto something there. And I have a couple questions for you about something you said earlier. When we're talking about eliminating grains as one of the primary things to do, you mentioned rice, and I recommend when people want a source of carbohydrate in their diet that white rice seems to work in moderate amounts with a meal full of vegetables and protein for people who are eating carbs. And I don't recommend eating carbs a lot or all the time. But as a relatively clean source of starch, not a source of vitamins or anything like that, removing the toxic outer parts of it. But it is technically a grain. And I just, my experience personally and with, you know, tens of thousands of people is that generally they handle white rice, they don't handle brown rice very well. Is white rice still a problem?
You're right. Rice is at the most benign end of the spectrum for grains, but it's not entirely benign. So there are people who can consume it and seem to get away okay. There are some people who are very sensitive to the wheat germ agglutinin protein. So there's a lectin protein in wheat, rye, barley, and other grains. It's called wheat germ agglutinin. Even though it's in rice, it's still called wheat germ agglutinin because the structure is identical to that in wheat. It's present in only small quantities because rice is mostly starch, as you know, and less than 1% protein. So the wheat germ agglutinin component is present in only small quantities. But some people do have gastrointestinal distress.
You're right.
And inflammation when they have rice. So that's one issue. Another issue is there is a lot of starch. Right. You know, I come from, my background, of course, is heart disease. And despite doing 15 years or so of heart procedures, for the last few years, all I did was heart disease prevention, including advanced lipoprotein analysis. That's, as you know, the test we do for a more insightful look rather than this stupid test called cholesterol testing. So when you do advanced lipoprotein testing, you're quickly sobered on how easy, how readily to provoke this small LDL particle abnormality is. That's, of course, the most common abnormality in people with heart attacks and heart disease, is an excess of small oxidation-prone LDL particles. Large LDL particles produced by fat consumption last about 24 hours, then they're cleared by the liver. Small LDL particles provoked by carbohydrate consumption, starch consumption, last about 5 to 7 days, sometimes longer. So in other words, one carbohydrate indulgence is sufficient to give you heart disease risk for about a week. And so I'm very, very mindful of starch exposure because of the small oxidation-prone LDL particle that is uncommonly long-lasting. And then there's this new issue that the U.S. government raised, and that is the arsenic exposure issue. Now, with consumption of small quantities, probably not an issue at all. But with frequent exposure, it's not quite clear what hazard that places. That still remains to be seen. But there is, at least in India and Bangladesh, there are instances of arsenic poisoning, though it seems to be brought out by having even further arsenic exposure through their drinking water.
We also have brown rice having 80 times more arsenic than white, which is why don't do brown rice because arsenic's an issue. Okay.
And the fibers, which are, you know, people have also, that's another fiction, of course, that we need cellulose fiber. That's, of course, an absurd misinterpretation of the data. If we need fiber, we need prebiotic fibers. That's quite clear. But we don't need cellulose. If we needed cellulose, you could get health from eating sawdust. And of course, that's nonsense.
Just eat the newspaper when you're done reading it.
That's right. Very good.
I guess it depends on what newspaper. Some of them are more full of contaminants than others.
That's right.
Now, in your book, Undoctored, you talk about wild, naked, and unwashed as your program. And it's pretty different from paleo, which is interesting. But you include legumes and tubers. And yet you were just talking about lectins. And it seems like a lot of people respond to the lectins. Lectins, for listeners, are these little proteins that are present in us and in most biology that stick to certain kinds of sugars in your body and can cause rheumatoid arthritis or gastric distress or other things like that. Why legumes? I know so many people who don't handle them well. It's probably more than don't. But to be opposed to, say, white rice, but to be in favor of legumes, what's your thinking on that? I know you have thinking on it.
Yeah, you know, I don't have... Here's what I think I've seen. If you add legumes, like let's say kidney beans or chickpeas, and you have an adverse effect, nearly all those people in my experience have dysbiosis. I mean, as you know, we all have some degree of dysbiosis. If our comparator are the Hadza or the Matzas of Peru, the people who live truly untainted hunter-gatherer lives, their bowel flora, of course, is completely different than the rest of the world. Yet their bowel flora, one in Africa, one in South America, so they're not talking to each other, not sharing poop and organisms, they have almost identical bowel flora. So if is that what our bowel flora should look like? Well, nobody really knows. But it's clear that modern people have completely different bowel flora, and it's probably some measure of dysbiosis. And of course, dysbiosis has become so incredibly common. And so if you give a person with dysbiosis a legume, the prebiotic fiber, the galacto-oligosaccharide prebiotic content, fiber content of the legumes will cause horrible things. It'll cause bloating, diarrhea, abdominal pain, inflammation, joint pain, suicidal thoughts, depression, all kinds of crazy stuff. Here's what I think I'm seeing. If you correct the dysbiosis, which is a whole other conversation, of course, and then you fold in prebiotic fibers, whether it's from a green banana, a raw potato, or inulin, or fructooligosaccharide powder, or legumes, the galacto-oligosaccharide prebiotic fiber of legumes, they seem to tolerate it. And I just don't see a lot of the lectin, presumed lectin toxicities. Now, that's kind of an informal anecdotal observation. So I'm still open to change my opinion on that. But I'm seeing a lot of people get by fine with small servings of legumes, despite the lectin. Yeah.
I put them in the suspect foods on the Bulletproof diet, where there's foods that always cause problems down here, like gluten and grains, foods that cause problems for segments of people, but you don't know until you try, and then foods that generally work for everyone. And so I'm always going back and forth. The two big questions are rice and legumes. And I end up on don't eat the brown rice, eat the white rice in moderation with other foods if you're going to do it. And if legumes work for you, great, but it's okay if they don't. And the dysbiosis thing is certainly something that I was challenged with for a long time. And something that I don't have evidence of right now. And we use the kind of fiber, the inulin fiber, in the Bulletproof collagen bar. So you're getting collagen, you're getting the brain octane that raises ketosis, and you're getting fermentable fibers.
That's great.
Some percentage of people with those with that kind of fiber, they do have dysbiosis, and then they eat the bars for a little while, and then they have enough fermentable fiber, it self-corrects. And other people are like, I don't want any fiber in my diet ever again because I have dysbiosis, and they need to see a doctor for that, I would say.
You know, I think things like this are clarifying over time with more and more people who do this, the more eyes we have looking at the issues. You know, if I know Dave Asprey's looking at these issues, I know we're going to find answers sooner. So, I mean, just think back 10 years ago, we weren't talking about prebiotic fibers and lectins, but now we are, and it's become a common discussion. So we've gotten much smarter really fast.
Yeah, it's because of big data. It's because of social media. It's because we can all Google the studies on PubMed right now, and you can see, well, here's evidence that supports what I noticed. And a lot of what you do, and a lot of what you do, because you're clinical, you see people in a clinical practice, or in just you have seen them, so you can then go out. Is there evidence that supports my observation? Which is something that would have been really hard to do before we had information the way we do now. And then you realize, well, there isn't a study about this, but there's 15 studies that support that are all around this one, and this is an observation, and it's repeatable that when I take people off all grains instead of just gluten-containing grains, that I see improvement. Therefore, like, I've got something here that's worthy of trying, because the risk of going grain-free is pretty low.
I'm glad you brought that up. Exactly. We're not talking about exploratory laparotomy. We're not talking about a frontal lobotomy, right? We're not talking about... We're talking about just a shift in food choices. And more often than not, people will be surprised, of course, what happens when you just make this little change in your shopping and eating habits, though it may take longer for some conditions. But more often than not, people are shocked at what happens. Doing the opposite of what the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans, Health Canada, and for the most part, your doctor told you to do. Doing the opposite. That to me is an astounding thing to say. That if we go against, the grain of conventional wisdom, we become healthy and slender and get off medications. So to me, that's it's an indictment of the healthcare system that they got it so wrong, Dave. They got it so wrong.
They did, and they weren't tracking the variables that matter. And one of the concerns that I have now is that in the next wave of epigenetics here, we aren't tracking other variables that matter, like the amount of light you're exposing laboratory animals to. So if you imagine you're doing a feeding study on mice and you put them under fluorescent lights that are shown to change the way your body produces glucose, you can induce type 2 diabetes-like symptoms with bright blue light over long periods of time and disrupting the sleep cycles of nocturnal animals. So we have all this stuff where no one ever thought to control for light or electromagnetic frequencies or temperature or vibration because the mouse is next to the refrigerator. But all those things are like environmental inputs. And so we say we controlled for all the variables, and we're smoking our own pipe when we say that. Like everything's a variable and we don't know how important a lot of them are. How do you think that's affecting the future of what you're doing with this stuff in clinical practice versus in university research?
I think we're witnessing armies of people who are wearing their Apple Watch, who have a Withings sleep device or blood pressure device or a pulse wave velocity scale. The proliferation of health apps, of people who track their health data and can make observations that no one else can make. If you yourself observe that your blood pressure goes up after you eat a certain food, or that some measure of inflammation goes up after you eat a certain food. Only you can do that. Or as you did, check your blood sugar response to various foods. If you have something to track, some kind of feedback parameter to track, it makes you really smart, really effective, really fast. And no doctor can do those kinds of things. And the tools are getting better and better every day. These are wonderful direct-to-consumer tools that you can implement on your own. So I love these do-it-yourself at home tests. Like one of my favorites is that it's an oral temperature with a digital thermometer when you first awaken. We don't have a lot of data supporting it, but I'll tell you, in real life, it is an incredibly effective measure to check your own thyroid status and to track your response to such things as iodine. My next door neighbor came over and he told me about his hypothyroid symptoms. And I told him, you probably have iodine deficiency, start iodine. And he started out with a temperature of 94.5, I believe, degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, so he was hypothermic. And within 2 weeks, it was up to 96.5. We're aiming, by the way, for 97.3 oral temperature upon arising. You can not only does it identify hypothyroidism, you can track it and see how much because if it doesn't go all the way back to 97.3, you have an impaired thyroid in addition to iodine deficiency. So it's a great tool. So we're having these tools come out that people can implement on their own and track on their own. So it's going to take away a lot of those variables that have been overlooked, like the light in the laboratory.
It is totally true. I was CTO of one of the wristband companies on Basis that Intel bought. So I wanted to do that because we get heart rate variability from the wrist. And the only tracker I'm wearing right now is this ring, which has actually the same stuff that used to be in a wristband. It's called an Oura ring. I'm not sure I'll keep it, but it seems like a cool thing for now. But it's tracking sleep and heart rate and even temperature fluctuations throughout the day. But it's small enough that it's getting less irritating. The next generation will be so tiny that it's probably actually worth wearing for most people because it takes no energy and no effort and no attention to get the data. Whereas you go back 5 years, it was a lot of work. And most people won't do the work. But when it's painless or when your phone just knows what's going on because you can see, actually, and this is true, your Xbox camera already can do this, it can see the micro pulsations of the veins in your forehead and get your heart rate just by looking at you on high resolution video. Like that is so cool. And we're barely scratching the surface of that. So I look forward 5 years from now and you'll be able to know all sorts of stuff about you. The big question is, will you be required to share that with your social media company where maybe that's not a good thing?
right. But you're right. These tools are coming out so fast, it's hard to keep up. But it's an exciting time where people have access to incredibly effective tools to measure health.
And in your book, Undoctored, you actually mention, and the reason I'm kind of going there, is you mentioned some of the resources for self-directed health where people can get lab tests at home and things like that. And I want people who are listening, all of whom are interested in this kind of stuff, to know that you've put that in there because it's a helpful resource.
And it's fun stuff. As you know, this is fun stuff. It's really a blast to track some of these measures. And you learn new lessons. But don't tell your doctor because your doctor's going to make fun of it because he doesn't understand it. Because it's about health, not about revenues for the healthcare system.
And I would encourage people, like, if your own lab tests show you that you're deficient in testosterone and you, or thyroid, whatever it is, and you take appropriate lifestyle steps like eating more undamaged fat in order to improve it, and you still are deficient, and you go to your doctor says, no, I won't prescribe that, you're within your rights to say, excuse me, I'm paying you for a service. I would like you to prescribe this for me, please. And if the doctor refuses, you don't have to leave his office. And if you don't leave his office, he can't see another patient. And you, if you resist, you know, it's not going to go well. They'll force you to leave. But if you are polite, right, and kind and nice, like, doctor, no, I really need this. And you just say, I really need this. I really need this. Don't say no. Don't get mad. Eventually, you're probably going to get that prescription. Otherwise, say, doctor, I'm afraid I can't pay for this. Like, I came here for this. The data is clear. And I understand you don't want to write it, but I don't want to pay. So could you please refund this entire appointment? And I'm telling you, if only a few people do that, you have a right to get what you came there to get. And I'm sorry if you're one of the physicians listening to this and you don't agree with that. You're allowed to filibuster your doctor if your doctor is not serving you, and you're kind and polite when you do it. So
that's great. That's great, Dave.
So I'm kind of going up on a little bit of a soapbox there. Yeah. You clearly know this, but just know you are the guy writing the check. You are the customer, and you have a right to say, no, I want the standard of care that I want. And if I want to try modafinil, I want to use testosterone, I want thyroid hormone because the data says this is going to help me, it's okay to ask, and it's okay to not take no for an answer.
I agree absolutely. And if the doctor won't comply and you have a heartfelt, genuine desire for this, find another who will. Sadly, we still have to rely on prescriptions. Though, by the way, I order my thyroid from England. Because I refuse to, because I know if I see any of my colleagues, they'll poke fun at me taking thyroid. So I just order, I go around them by ordering it directly without a prescription.
Yeah, you can order almost anything you want without a prescription. And it's amazing. Sometimes you might have quality issues with it. But I would just encourage people listening who are, especially if you're on a budget, and going to the doctor, it's hundreds of dollars, and going to your pharmacy, hundreds of dollars, or it's $20 for the same medication online. You might want to do it. In fact, I had a brain-eating amoeba infection recently for 4 months. That was really a problem. What was the thing called? Was it histolytica? Anyhow, I had Giardia and that. So no one could diagnose this with lab tests. And I finally saw an amazing guy in New York who's an 80-year-old physician who's written eight textbooks on tropical diseases. And he's like, oh yeah, lab tests don't work for this kind of stuff. You have to actually like look at the problem. So he went in and diagnosed me with a live microscope thing. And the problem was the prescription for eight pills was, let's see, $1,300, which is patently offensive. And it should have been covered by insurance, but my insurance company turned it down. And so they wanted, you know, 10 hours of bureaucracy. I'm like, I'm in New York. I got to fly home. So I paid out of pocket. But I'm fortunate that I was able to do that on that trip. But I could have, if I was willing to take another week out of those months of discomfort, I could have probably ordered that stuff from India for pennies. And just, I want people listening to this to understand, if economics do play a role, but if you know what it is that you're looking for, you can get the tests for cheap, you get the data for cheap, and you get the drugs for cheap if you need them. Or better yet, just eat the right stuff and you won't need the drugs.
And I also remind people that you're not on your own. You may try things without your doctor, but you have lots of resources now, like the Bulletproof Conversations, the Undoctored Conversations, patientlikeme.com, lots and lots of other websites, forums, discussion groups, social media, to get feedback. Just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean you have to believe it, but you can factor it into your thinking, and you can make your own decisions. You can read the studies, and so you're not alone. There's lots and lots of help, and that help is getting better and more sophisticated every day.
It is indeed. Well, Dr. Davis, I want to ask you the question for Bulletproof Radio that I ask all the guests. And if someone came to you tomorrow and they said, I want to perform better at everything I do in my life, what are the three most important pieces of advice you have for me? What would you tell them, just based on your entire life experience, not just being a doctor?
It would be the same thing I tell people through the Wheat Belly and now the Undoctored message. That is, eat no grains, and so many problems go away just with that. You get a 2+2=7 effect if you combine that with restoration of vitamin D. And while there's more to health than just this, then restore bowel flora. That's a work in progress. It's the most complicated part of all. But that alone, as you know, Dave, is a huge piece of health. There's more, but those three, I would wager, reverse 80 to 90% of all common chronic conditions. So it may not address 100%. Nothing does, of course. But that alone would be a real powerful combination.
It sounds really powerful to me. Well, where can people get a copy of Undoctored now? Just a favorite online retailer? What's the best bet for that?
All the retailers have them in pre-order, like Amazon. So it doesn't come out officially till May 9th. So okay. Right now it's just available in pre-order. I'm still building the website, the blog, et cetera, which the blog I'm hoping launches in the next few weeks. The website, probably not till April or so. It's a very big, ambitious website that has lots of incredible new things. So it's taken a lot longer than I thought. But I want to create a space also where people can have these kinds of undoctored conversations, where it's not a scary place to say, my doctor refused to help me, so I told him to go to get lost. And I'm looking for a doctor who will help me. In the meantime, I need a little bit of help with cultivating my bowel flora. So I want to create that kind of a space, kind of like what you're doing with your bulletproof conversations.
Well, there's plenty of room for these conversations out there. If you have a reliable fecal transplant swap system, okay. I get that question a lot. People saying, where do I get clean poop? I'm like, guys, I can't answer that for you, man. I have no idea. But there are communities out there even going that far. So there's so much conversation and something that you've clearly glommed onto. I believe that we're fundamentally wired to help each other. Like that's what feels good as human beings, especially people who are healthy, who have eaten the right foods, who aren't in brain fog land. They always want to help. And there's always 2 or 3% trolls. You just ban those guys. But the rest of the time on a community like that, you go in there, you're like, I have this problem. And there's like 25 people who know a ton of stuff and they'll just help you because it feels good and because they don't want someone else to go through what they went through. So I've been helped by people like that so much. And to this day, you know, they help a lot more people than you or I do as individuals, even though we have a big reach. So it's
yes,
cool.
Yes, absolutely. I'm seeing the same exact thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on Bulletproof Radio again. I'm a big fan of what you're doing with Wheat Belly, and I like your perspective on undoctored and the I'm forgetting the words, naked, lewd, and what was it?
Wild, naked, and unwashed.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Wild, naked, and unwashed program. All right, Dr. Davis, thanks again.
Dave, thank you. You're doing great work.
If you enjoyed today's episode, there's 2 things you should do. Number one, head on over to orderheadstrong.com and pre-order Headstrong. And while you're at it, you can pre-order Dr. Davis's book, Undoctored. There's your 2 things. And if you wanted to say thanks at no cost to you, just leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. We're above 1,500 5-star ratings. This is a Webby Award-winning podcast. As CEO of a rapidly growing company, as a dad, as a New York Times bestselling author, I put out 2 of these a week for you. And because I have fun doing it, but also if easiest way you can say thanks, just leave a good review so someone else can find the show and get some value from it. Have an awesome day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.